Welcome to the best episode of the Salty Nerd Podcast ever. Maybe not. I don't know. We're talking about the Red Dawn, the crazy Swayze week here on the Salty Nerd Podcast. I cannot wait to talk about this movie.
This is not the Hemsworth Red Dawn.
No. Do not mistake this with the Hemsworth. This is the OG Red Dawn. Yeah. I'm pretty sure you were in this movie. Weren't you like an extra up in Oregon somewhere?
This is the Dalton.
Listen, I might as well have been, because this is how growing up in rural Southern Oregon in the mountains.
He's a Wolverine.
Listen, if you're
man, when this movie comes out when I'm 14 years old.
Oh, and 14?
Yeah.
That's perfect age.
It's the perfect age. Yeah. And I grew up with a gun and a rifle in my hand. And this was just how we lived. We, you know,
prepared for the worst. For the roosties.
Like, I shit you not. Me and my group of like 8 to 10 friends that we all hung out on weekends and stuff. We would go up in the mountains above our ranch that I grew up on. And we made fortifications and
I love it.
Dug caves.
I love it.
And made forts and shit that we knew that we could live in. Up in the hills, up in the mountains.
If paratroopers came down.
Goddamn communists paratrooped into our valley and wanted to like fight us. And we could have put up a little bit of a fight. It was pretty wild, I'm not gonna lie. This movie got your blood boiling when you were 14.
For sure. Mm-hmm. For sure.
This is an America propaganda film.
100%. This was paid for by the American government.
It was awesome.
Probably by cigarettes. Brought to you by the American Surgeon General.
Marlboro. Smoke Marlboros and kill commies. Uh-huh. Like, that's this movie in a nutshell.
I told Jude when we were watching this, I was like, you know, there's just something comfortable about fighting Russians. that we don't have anymore. Yeah.
It's the 80s version of fighting Nazis.
Or the Chinese.
I think that's nowadays, maybe. I don't know.
Because in this movie, the Chinese were on our side.
Yeah.
Oh, that's right. They did mention that shortly.
600,000 screaming Chinese.
No, like, 600 million.
I thought there was a billion or something like that. Yeah. Anyway. Red Dawn, the original with Chris Hemsworth. We're going to be talking about that movie because...
No, not Chris Hemsworth.
I'm sorry. Did I say
Patrick
that?
Patrick Swayze.
You did.
Charlie Sheen.
Cut it out.
My bad. This Shady Miles got me all twisted up.
He's all fucked up.
We don't talk about the Chris Hemsworth Red Dawn.
No, I watched a trailer for that when we were done watching this last night.
So did we.
I thought I was watching the trailer for Extraction 2 for a minute.
Oh, no.
And then I was like,
Well, you know what's funny about the Chris Hemsworth remake is that the Chris Hemsworth character, Patrick Swayze character in the original, so like he's coming back from a tour with like the Marines or the Army or something like that, and so like he actually has like military training. In the original, the kids were just like, "Well, I think the gun gets pointed this way."
He was the quarterback.
Yeah.
For that, anyway, let's get into it.
All right.
Red Dawn, not the Hemsworth version. Crazy
I don't
Swayze
think you
version.
Need to say that.
No, you know, this is the good version. This is the Sheen Swayze version.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, dude. There's so many 80s crushes.
So many. Yeah. So many. This is the Rat Pack. The Brat Pack.
Ish.
Just really quick before we get going. I read a review last night on Letterboxd. And I'm not going to lie, it kind of pissed me off.
Of this movie.
But it was written by some fucking child that was probably born in 2003, right? And the review was one sentence, and it was a, what was it? It was Brat Pack for fascists is what it said. I'm like, what the fuck? What does that even mean? It's like, you son of a bitch.
It's just, glorious.
It was just,
wow. That's so dumb.
It was ridiculous. And I'm like, I was just like,
this 100% was paid for by the U.S. government.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're all on the same page with that.
Smith & Wesson.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
This is a go USA.
I don't have a problem with that.
USA.
Yeah. This is a USA. This is like up there with Top Gun Maverick the original Top Gun.
I mean, I have some thoughts, but we'll talk about it in a little bit.
We'll talk about it in a minute. Yeah, Jude.
Yes.
Hit us with that synopsis.
All right, sir. 1984, Red Dawn, rated PG-13 with a runtime of 1 hour 54 minutes. This had a budget of $17 million. What do you think this brought into
coming
the box office?
Coming in under 20?
Mm-hmm. 84? Not that unusual.
Yeah, this is 1980s money.
That's true. It's true. I'm going to say this is a pretty hoorah movie. You were 14 when it came out. I'm going to say it made $75 million.
Okay, Vader?
I honestly couldn't tell you how much this movie made, because
I guess
I know I'm going to, but I feel like I watched this movie the most times on
VHS.
Yeah.
I don't remember if I watched it in the theater or not. Uh-huh. I think I did.
Kadesh, did you watch it in the theater? You were an army brat.
No, I did not see this in the
theater. Okay.
I was far too young.
They say a successful movie is they tripled their budget, right? Uh-huh. What was it?
17.
So 17. I'm going to go, it made probably 40.
Okay.
And I'm probably wrong.
Okay.
Okay.
So I think that this movie found its home in like HBO reruns.
Okay.
It had a budget of $17 million with a box office bring home of $38 million.
Not bad. That's respectable.
Close. Yeah.
That's respectable.
Yeah.
You were closer than I was. I said 75 because I'm an idiot.
But I think this got watched a lot more in the living room than it did in the theater.
This movie has been shown on the TBS channels a kajillion times. Mm-hmm.
This movie also had, when it came out in theaters, it got a lot of like publicity because it was considered to be the most violent movie ever made.
What?
Wow.
What?
Yeah. Get out.
No, like legitimately, like remember 1980s?
Yeah. I mean, they're killing teenagers.
Well,
that's fair.
They're killing a lot of people.
Yeah.
And they're actually showing like blood and gore and like people getting shot by bullets and stuff blowing up. So you got to remember that at the time, the type of action and graphic violence that was in this movie was not common.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I believe that this movie was like one of the first to get like a PG-13 rating.
Yeah. Early in PG-13 history because.
Yeah. So before this,
they
it was
had
either,
just started using this.
Yeah, before this, it was either PG or X.
Yeah, I mean, the very first scene in this movie is in the classroom, right?
Oh my God!
And the paratroopers are coming down, and the teacher's all, "Hey, what are you guys doing out there?"
This movie
and then he just goes,
immediately.
There is no hesitation,
and it's just, "Hey, what are you guys doing?" And it's kids flapped out in the middle of the
honestly
over the window, and the teacher's dead. It's like the assault. Holy shit.
Yeah, and most of the teenagers in this movie die.
Yeah, yeah.
And so like that wasn't something that 80s audiences were like, very
spoiler for a 50-year-old.
Well,
movie.
Let me tell you what the movie's about.
Take it away.
All right, Russia and Cuba teamed up to start World War III, but they're no match for the Wolverines, a group of teens using their survival skills to hide out in the Colorado mountains, led by Dalton. Bodhi takes in more survivors, and they begin picking off foreign invaders until they get enough ammo to start waging their own war. When the entire cast of The Outsiders gets their hands on some rocket launchers, they waste no time shooting down Soviet tanks and choppers, but start losing members of the team. Finally, Sam Wheat and his brother Charlie Sheen decide to separate from the group on a suicide mission to take out as many enemies as they can while giving what remains of the Wolverines a chance at escape. Discuss.
This movie takes zero time setting up.
None. Yeah.
They're just like, hey guys, invasion.
Yeah.
And
you're in class, now you're at war.
Yeah. And listen, for me, I don't know if it's because of this movie or not. I don't know. But for whatever reason, growing up, I used to imagine this scenario all the time.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh, what if in church and all of a sudden the US gets invaded and I have to run away with my friends and go. It's like ingrained in my head for some reason. And I'm not even the generation that this movie was like aimed at.
I do that every single day.
Yeah, me too.
But with the zombie apocalypse.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. There's certain things.
Do you think us living in Las Vegas that I haven't figured out an escape plan to get back to Southern Oregon? Where
oh, yeah, yeah. For sure.
My mom and for dad live in the sticks.
Nice.
The sticks.
So I'm coming with you.
Vader's parents' home. That's where we're.
Only problem is getting there. It's going to be a Mad Max adventure.
Well, you have a Jeep, so you have a leg up on most people. I get it. I get it. 100%. That's why I drive my truck.
For honest to God, I bought my vehicle,
dude,
with the thought in mind of I might have to bug out of here.
Three years ago.
When I was walking through the grocery store and people were fucking
during the pandemic.
People were fighting over a fucking can of beans.
No, dude, do you remember the assault on toilet paper? People were fighting about toilet paper when COVID first started.
It was like I almost left. I was like, fuck it, we're getting in the Jeep.
Yeah.
We're going. Yeah. We're going to my mom and dad's. And
it wouldn't take much.
Put Louie in the car.
It wouldn't take much. Because like
listen, we're 2 weeks away from ruin.
Mm-hmm. Less than that.
Less than that.
Yeah.
I mean, from people turning on each other.
Yeah.
Neighbor on neighbor. Fuck you. I want your bread that you got in your cupboard.
100%.
Yeah.
So
everybody was stockpiling something.
Yeah.
Like it was either toilet paper or canned goods or whatever. I stocked up on bullets.
Nice. Same. Well, as Vegas locals,
yeah,
like we are very isolated.
We have Air Force Base. We have shit, weird shit around all over.
And there's only two roads out of there.
Surrounded by mountains.
There's the 15 south and the 15 north, and that's it.
We're a primary target for an ICBM to come land on our head.
Sure.
Right here, and I don't like
that. For sure. Yeah. But I've this scenario in my head is always. But let's get back to the movie. I'm sorry. We're talking about like disaster prep.
Yeah, talking about what the thought process.
But what's funny is like in the early 80s, which is when this movie was made. So like, you know, we're kind of fresh off the Cuban Missile Crisis in the late
60s. We're still in the Cold War at this point.
We're in like the heat of the depths of the Cold War. And so like the Russian scare, the Russian menace was very much alive and well at that time.
And that went on for like 10 years.
It went on for a while.
Yeah.
But this was kind of the start of making like the Russians like the primary bad guys in Hollywood cinema. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, like they now that the Nazis were defeated, like they wanted to bring in the Russians and stuff like that.
To this day, you still haven't seen like a good guy Russian character in anything.
Well, they're all gangsters and bad guys.
Yeah.
100%.
Yeah. So what's interesting about this movie is that basically, so it was written and directed by John Milius, who I'll go into more in depth like a little bit later on. But he actually went and studied the, when he was growing up, he wanted to be a military soldier.
Mm.
And so like, you know, his entire youth was spent like training to like go into the military. But then the military rejected him because he had asthma. And so like he was kind of like a frustrated, like, you know, like I wish I could have been like a soldier type guy.
Yeah.
But he had connections to people in the military. And so he actually based the invasion and the setup, because at the beginning of the movie, there's like this little like scrawl that kind of tells you like what's happened to lead up to this invasion. He based all that on actual real world kind of like military scenarios that they gamed out to be like, okay, how could World War III happen? And so like he basically got access to that information. He was like, okay, I'm going to write a script around this.
He started by playing tic-tac-toe with a computer.
Yeah.
And buttering his corn on a piece of bread.
Yes.
Yeah, I think it's safe to say that most Americans, especially ones growing up in the 80s, late 90s, whatever, like that generation of kids have, like, they've had this thought in the back of their head. And I think, honestly, I did want to say this when I was watching this movie. I think we're pretty lucky to be a Kevlar-wrapped freaking country. Like, we have Canada above us. They're not going to do anything. and we've got Mexico, who's not going to do anything to us.
Canada sent their Girl Scouts in to invade Minnesota.
Canada was triggered by a local podcast.
So, us imagining, like, what if our country got freaking invaded, when, like, people in the other side of the world are like, our country gets invaded every other week. Like, it's a weird thing for Americans to think about, because, like, if it does happen, it happens. Yeah. It's not, like, a regular thing for us.
The booze has got pictures of guys on horses coming over
the Mounties.
Well, you know what's funny about that Canada joke is that in the original script for this movie, the location was in Michigan. And so, like, when they bring on the mantle of the Wolverines, it's like that's the mascot of the University of Michigan. And so when they changed the location to make it more central to America in Colorado, they were like, the Wolverines are cool. We're just going to keep them.
Wolverine. Yeah. That's
everybody's
a dope
already
name.
Saying Wolverines. Yeah.
So what I wanted to say about this movie after watching, I've seen it many, many times before, but after watching it today, not today, but like when I was in preparation for the podcast, I was really thinking about like why this movie has such an impact. And for me, it was like, it was absolutely a hoorah, go America, you know, fight for your homeland movie. But I don't feel like it glorified war in a way that modern movies might today.
Not at all.
It was like, hey, yeah, war happens and it's not a good thing.
And it sucks.
It sucks.
That opening scene where the paratroopers or whatever come down, they just start blowing
holes people down
into a classroom.
Yeah.
And everybody escapes, but you see one kid didn't escape. That's fucking shocking even today.
Yeah, 100%.
I did not expect to see like a dead kid hanging out of a classroom window.
Later on in the movie, after like the Wolverines get kind of established and their numbers start to get cut down over a course of time, because they've been through so many battles and they're fighting for, is it like a year?
It's 6 months.
Months? Okay. After the course of 6 months, like, they start losing people. And that final assault with those helicopters, like, when I'm watching this, I'm like, Jesus Christ, man. Yeah. Like, that.
Imagine being a 17-year-old a horse, and all you have is a rifle.
Yeah.
And you're going starving.
Up a,
And you're fighting a chopper.
I feel like those Russian battleships. And
the battle choppers?
The battle choppers.
Yeah.
Those, every time you see one of those ones in a movie, they're there to instill
fear.
Yeah.
100%.
And those things are real.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
They're intimidating. And you see him in other movies like Rocky 2 or Rambo.
Rambo 2. For, yeah.
This movie. And you know, there's other movies where Russian military are the bad guys. They always got that fucking 8 million ton chopper.
Just, yeah.
Dude, like, you want to hear something funny?
And you're just like, Jesus.
So like the replicas of the Russian tanks in this movie, they were so realistic that when they were transporting them via truck to the sound stages in Hollywood.
No.
There were these two CIA guys who were just like passing by on the street, and they saw this and they were like, what the fuck's going on? So like, the CIA actually...
We're being invaded.
The CIA was like, what is a Russian tank doing here in America? Uh-huh. And so they tracked it down. They're like, oh, wait, this is, you guys made this for a movie? Like, where did you get the specs that, for
that's
this stuff?
Fucking dope, dude. They were like, oh, can we have it when you guys are done?
Yeah. No, they were like, oh, yeah, we forgot we paid for that.
Well, it was just funny because like the replicas of the Russian armaments in this movie were so well done that even the CIA was like, wow, like those are really good replicas.
That's awesome.
Yeah. It's a fantastic movie. And I really appreciated the fact that it wasn't just like 100% hoorah.
Well, also, yeah, Alex, like, you tend to hate movies about with kids in them.
Okay, but there's an age thing here. Yeah. Okay. When I say I don't like movies with kids, is I don't like movies where there's like adolescents going up against adults and the adults.
Okay.
The adults have to be stupid in order to be defeated by the adolescents.
So his line when, is 15 years old.
When the kids are in high school and they're quarterbacks and they're like on the cusp of adulthood, they're like
and
18.
And I think their leader is around 20 at this point.
Yeah, well, I mean, we're getting up into like the young adult.
Yeah.
Fine. Mm-hmm. And they're not superpowered either. They take hits, they die. These kids are not.
They're just good at hunting.
They're good at hunting, and this is this form of warfare. Guerrilla warfare is a tried and true. Uh-huh. Like you go back to the Revolutionary War, that's how we won. Mm-hmm. You go back to the Vietnam War, that's how they kind of freaking won. It's this like surprise attack, ambush advantage, knowing the home turf, that kind of thing. Like it all makes sense. Mm-hmm. None of this said to me like, oh, these kids are freaking somehow brilliant and everybody else is dumb.
Yeah.
That didn't happen in this movie.
Also, we should point out that this is actually a World War III movie.
Yeah.
This movie... Mm-hmm. portrays the events of a World War III, but it does it on such a like a local scale. Like you don't see the nukes going off. You don't see like these massive things. It's just from the point of view of this one group of high schoolers
in the 80s, everyone was prepped for World War III.
Oh yeah.
I was always kind of, especially I noticed it last night, they really did a really good exposition dump when the colonel crash landed.
Yep.
And he comes in.
Played by Powers Booth.
Yeah. And he comes in and he explains. He goes, Washington's gone. Mm-hmm. Kansas City's gone. Houston or whatever.
You're sitting around the campfire.
Gone.
Right?
And he's telling everybody things. And he's telling the audience how the war is being fought in that scene. It's like they've basically pinchered us in. Mm-hmm. You know, they came up from the south. They did this and that. And they got the nuclear fields. They did strategic nuke sites. And now the entire country is basically a giant battlefield because we're not going to launch nukes on our own soil and they're not going to do it either.
Yeah.
And we're like,
fair enough.
Okay. Well, this kind of makes sense. And that goes back to Kadish, what he was saying earlier about John Milius probably got that from about different scenarios of how they'd actually fight a fight like this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's interesting to me.
What was interesting is like, so the idea was that in this particular town, the invasion came up through the Mexican border.
Mm-hmm.
And the Cubans were kind of like the lead on it with the backing of the Russians. And so like during the movie, you have this weird kind of combination of people speaking Spanish and people speaking Russian. And I don't know about you guys, but when we were watching on Amazon, they didn't have the foreign language subtitled.
Oh, thank you. Yeah.
Yeah.
I was going to say that was what I didn't like most about this movie is I had no idea what anybody was saying, any of the enemies were saying.
Yeah, but the thing is that I wasn't sure if that was intentional or not. Like, I don't know if in the original theatrical release, if they actually had that subtitled or not.
I think it was intentional.
Because like the fact that you didn't know what they were saying made it kind of like more interesting because you're from the point of view of the teenagers. Cause like, you don't know what they're doing.
Can I ask you guys, did you have the English subtitles selected on?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. If you select them off, then you get the foreign language subtitles.
Yeah. Really?
Fuck off.
Yeah. Cause like half the movie, I was like, why am I not reading what these generals are saying?
Annoying. Yeah,
There's a whole like kind of like a C storyline going between the Nicaraguan Cuban commander guy and the Russian dude.
Yeah, he regrets being there.
There's full scenes. scenes between these people.
So the Cuban guy has a bit of respect for Patrick Swayze and the Wolverines because
he
used to be a guerrilla rebel back in the day.
That makes that whole last scene make sense now.
I feel so bad for you guys.
I'm upset.
and he doesn't get along with the Russian commander because he's just an asshole Russian dude. You know, he's like, these are just like the people in Afghanistan. Fuck them. Destroy them. Kill them.
Yeah.
And the Cuban guy's like,
these are respectable freaking people fighting for their homeland.
This is their home.
If you turn your English subtitles off, this is available on Amazon Prime. So I guess for our audience, be warned. If you have the English subtitles on, it, for whatever reason, gets rid of the foreign language. So I turned myself after I realized
why didn't you text me that?
I'm sorry. I watched it last night. You guys were already done.
Yeah. All right.
I was like, oh, there's something going on with the subtitle settings. So I changed my subtitle settings to English off, no subtitles whatsoever, because I can hear what the English speaking people are saying. Mm-hmm. But I couldn't understand what was happening with the Spanish and the Russian.
That's funny. We even stopped and went into subtitles to see if there was some setting we could switch. It didn't even occur to us to just shut it off.
Turn it off. And then you get the Russian and the Spanish subtitles. There's the whole storyline between those two generals is really fascinating. And that makes the ending scene
completely make
hit
more sense.
So much more. Yeah, yeah, it hits really well. So be warned, I guess, if you're watching it on Amazon.
Turn the
subtitles
off.
Can I talk a little bit about John Milius?
Sure.
For a second?
Yeah, go for it.
Because my film nerd in me wants to get in on
this. Take it away.
So for those of you who don't know who John Milius is, he was kind of part of the counterculture revolution in Hollywood. His mentor was Francis Ford Coppola. He came up with all George Lucas and Steven Spielberg around the counterculture revolution that led into the 1980s blockbuster era. And he is actually a super important figure in Hollywood in the sense of the movies that he worked on. He wrote Apocalypse Now. He came up with the Go Ahead Punk Make My Day thing for Dirty Harry.
Oh. More
recently, he produced Rome for HBO.
Okay.
That was his baby. He got that going. And he's a really well-known script doctor. But outside of that, he was on the board of directors for the NRA with Charlton Heston. He was one of the founding people behind the UFC. UFC was actually his idea.
Wow.
He came up with the octagon shaped ring and stuff like that. Wow. So very important figure. Also, he's good friends with the Coen brothers. And if you ever watch The Big Lebowski, the character of Walter is based on him.
Get out. Really?
Yeah, if you look at a picture of John Milius, it's John Goodman.
That's
that
amazing.
Yeah.
Wow. That's
it's funny when you were talking about how we grew up earlier. I kept picturing him as Will Wheaton in Toy Soldiers, wearing an earring, being a bad guy.
Well, what's funny is in the late 60s when he was going through USC film school, he got heavily involved in gay culture, the nightclubs and stuff like that. And he tried really hard to be gay, but he just couldn't get into dudes.
Oh, so, poor guy.
So he kind of
Wait, what? Stop.
We'll talk about that later.
Yeah, we'll talk about that later.
We've all been there.
You want to be gay, but you can't be into dudes?
Well, there was a book called Easy Rider Raging Bulls that was
I read that.
The counterculture revolution. Yeah. And John Milius, it goes into detail about how he was just so into the freedom and the lavishness of the gay subculture in Hollywood and stuff like that. And he got really into it.
He just couldn't commit.
Yeah, he was like, I'm just not into dudes.
Just couldn't commit, guys. I love this shirt.
You're going to have to cut this out.
Well, then you better get the fuck out of here.
You're going to have to cut this out, interview, but God, I just love the style, but I can't suck a dick. It's just not going to happen.
Listen, if you don't suck a dick, you can't wear sequins.
I mean, that was pretty much his mentality. He's like, I just can't suck a dick.
There's no feathers for you, bro.
Jesus Christ.
What's funny is John Milius. He's kind of thought of as an extreme right wing guy because he's very much about the Second Amendment. He loves his guns. He was pro military, stuff like that. But he's actually more of an anarchist. He just hates government.
That's my kind of guy.
He's very anti-war. And this movie Red Dawn was actually meant to be a very kind of nihilistic anti-war message at the end.
Yeah,
which we'll get into, but. milieu. So like he made this movie coming off of Conan the Barbarian, which he also wrote and directed.
I love that movie. Man. I love this milieu's guy. He's
great.
Yeah, he's great.
This milieu's motherfucker.
He might not suck dick, but he's a pretty good director.
I mean, I can overlook it.
He's got good style.
Yeah. So John Milius, like this was kind of like his baby and his follow-up to Conan. And he's a very important figure in the fact that like he's played like script doctoring roles on some like very important movies. In fact, at one point, do you guys remember there was an era where basically there were these competing Alexander the Great biopics?
I do remember that. Yeah.
All right. So like Oliver Stone made one with
Angelina Jolie
and Colin Farrell.
Colin Farrell. That's right.
So about 5 years before that, or 10 years, sometime in the '90s. Milius was actually working on a Alexander the Great biopic starring Jean-Claude Van Damme.
Oh, fuck off!
Yeah, Jean-Claude Van Damme was going to play John Milius' version of Alexander the Great.
Oh my God.
Unfortunately, it never got made.
Alexander the Great doing splits.
But
need a camera for my muscles.
Exactly. So this is a very John Milius movie in the sense that like it's very like graphic. It's very pro gun. It's very pro military. It's very pro independence. But it's also got this kind of like dark twist to it.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole kind of like prepper mentality of like World War III is coming. Like this was something that was completely from John Milius. So if you ever want to get a good sense of how John Milius sees the world, can't watch Conan. Conan's a fantasy, but like Red Dawn is closer to like how he thinks shit would go down.
Wow.
I love it. Honestly, there's no flaw in the logic of how this happens. I bought it every step of the way. And the fact that, we might as well talk about the end of this movie, like the end of the movie where pretty much all of my 80s crushes.
I was just going to say, you want to talk about your crush, Leah Thompson?
Leah Thompson and
Jennifer Grey. Do you have a thing for her too?
Oh my God.
Really? All right.
Jennifer Grey from Ferris Bueller's Day Off?
Yeah.
From the Angry Sister?
Yeah.
You like her post or pre nose job?
Pre. Definitely pre. Yeah. I mean, she's pretty both ways, but like nose job is like,
she looks unnatural now.
She looks, really? She looks weird. I don't know. I haven't seen a recent picture of her.
I gotta look at that.
But yeah, both of those women, I don't know, it's weird to say that for this movie because they're teenagers, but both of those women in this movie, fantastic. Like, the roles that they played were integral to the movie.
Just while we're on the subject of those two girls,
yeah, go for it.
There are a couple things that I want to mention about them. So first of all, this movie, it's close to two hours long.
It's an hour and 54 minutes, I think.
Yeah, yeah. It's a pretty long movie.
Good length.
Especially for the 80s.
That's what she said.
But so there were two things that got cut out of this movie, not just for time, but also for content. So in the movie, Leah Thompson's character, she kind of forms a crush over Powers Booth.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of funny because when she first comes across him after he got shot down in his plane, she tests him to see if he's Russian. She's like, what's the capital of Texas? And he's like, Austin. She's like, wrong, Houston. And it's like, no, he was right. It's Austin. That was kind of like an inside joke because I think Leah Thompson actually thought Houston was like the...
I mean, that's a fair mistake.
Dallas.
But so in the movie, there's like this implied thing that like Leah Thompson has like a crush on Powers Booth.
Right.
And, you know, he's a much older man than she is. Like, there's got to be at least like a 10-year age difference.
At least.
And they actually shot a love scene between the two of them where like they actually hooked up and test audiences were kind of creeped out by like the age difference.
Plus like getting introduced to her character, she was attacked. They don't come out and say what happened to her, but she's fucked up from what happened to her.
She basically got raped by Russian soldiers.
I mean, her grandpa said those Russian commie bastards tried to have their way with girls.
Yeah. Yeah, and she's in like even in all of the bait scenarios, it's Jennifer Grey who goes out and like is the bait. Leah Thompson never does that. Mm-hmm. She's always the one with the gun.
Yeah.
So she's fucked up from like being attacked her having a sex scene does not make sense in this movie. I'm glad they took it out.
There's also a very dark scene where like they imply that like she was like sodomized by like the Russians when Charlie Sheen's like, they shove it up your ass and like she like really overreacts and stuff.
Oh wow. Jesus.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
And the other one is that there was like a lot more of a development of a romance between Patrick Swayze's character and Jennifer Grey's character in the original cut.
Yeah, but they hated each other in real life.
What? Well, don't burst my bubble.
I'm going to throw that to Jude in a second.
Oh.
But basically they had a very developed relationship. So like at the end when she's like squeezing like, you know, juice on top of Patrick Swayze's head, and then like when she eventually dies and you see like his relationship. Like in the movie, it just seems like they were close friends, but mm-hmm. like they were actually like more romantic in the longer cut of this movie.
They didn't hate each other in Dirty Dancing, right?
Yes, they did.
Oh, no.
God, can I finish?
Jesus.
That's what she said.
Yeah. Sometimes not at all. So basically, Patrick Swayze went to John Mulaney and he was like, hey, I don't think this movie needs my romance with Jennifer Grey.
To be honest with you, it doesn't.
And so Milius is like, yeah, I think you're right. So like he cut out like I think about 15 minutes of like relationship development between those two characters.
That's fine.
But it's funny because Jude burst my bubble while we were watching this too about like how much Patrick Swayze and Jennifer Grey hated each other.
Do they really hate each other?
Yeah.
So
I think if memory serves, I think what happened was, so you know Patrick Swayze was like, he prided himself on being like a man.
Right,
and he always did like all of his own stunts. And mm-hmm. he was very knowledgeable about horses. So like all of the stuff with the horses and the stunts, he was doing all of his own shit. And from what I remember in other interviews, I think Jennifer Grey wasn't as comfortable doing that stuff. And he gave her a really fucking hard time about it to the point where she felt like
on this movie.
Yeah. To the point where she felt like he was being bullying her.
Yeah.
Yeah. And she complained about it. And then that got back to Patrick Swayze. And then Patrick Swayze was like, well, fuck you. And so then they got through it and they made a movie. So then Patrick Swayze had gotten hired first for Dirty Dancing and they were interviewing or like auditioning girls to come in and they had great chemistry, probably because they hated each other.
Probably.
And then when they went to hire Jennifer Grey, Patrick Swayze was like, do not hire her. We don't work well together. He tried to get her from being hired, but it worked. And years, like maybe even decades later, they ended up making up and they both said like, we were both assholes.
Huh.
Well, to add to that, so John Milius as a director, he did something kind of interesting on this film. So like Patrick Swayze's kind of like, you know, he's picking up where the Outsiders left off as like, you know the leader of the group, the older brother type.
What was his name? Dallas and Outsiders?
Daryl.
Whatever
it's Daryl, but they all called him Derry.
Yeah.
I read the book a million times.
I'm too drunk to remember. Yeah. I love that movie though.
So what John Milius would do is because all the, like the young group of actors looked up to Patrick, he'd pass on his directing notes through Patrick Swayze. So he'd tell Patrick, he's like, hey, tell Thomas to do this or tell Leah to do this. And like Patrick Swayze being the good soldier and actor that he was and the professional, like he would pass these notes on. But the actors started to resent him because like he was basically like directing them, even though it was John Milius. And so like Patrick was like, yeah, like Milius used me, man.
Well, that's the same thing that Spielberg did on Saving Private Ryan. He put all of the cast through
another movie Milius ghost wrote.
Oh, really?
Really?
Oh, we got to talk about that movie. Spielberg put the entire cast through like rigorous boot camp for the army stuff, except for Matt Damon. he purposefully left him out so that all the other actors would resent him for not having to go through it.
That's a good idea.
It's funny because all the teens in this movie went through like an 8-week boot camp.
Wow.
Military stuff.
Wolverine school.
They just made them go camping in the mountains
for
8 weeks.
Eagle Scouts, come on.
No. Like the group actually worked as like the counterinsurgency for like an actual like National Guard exercise and stuff like that. So like they had like legitimate training for
That's super cool stuff.
Yeah.
I would love to do something like that.
And they were trained in like real guns. So like they were using prop guns while shooting the movie, but for like those 8 weeks, they were using like live ammo.
That's
like,
so freaking badass.
Well, they didn't have CGI to be able to like put stuff, you know, like muzzle shot.
They had stuff they had blanks, right? They used blanks in those.
Well, that's another thing about this movie. There are no miniatures. There's no blue screen. Mm-hmm. There's no CGI.
They're like, blowing shit up.
Like everything that gets blown up was actually blown up. Everything that was shot was actually using.
Dude,
like,
when the Russians were finally like, all right, we've had enough of these freaking yahoos. We need to like just lay down fire across this forest. And they're sitting there watching these people just do napalm runs. And I was like, that's real. Yeah. Like, that's so freaking cool.
I mean, there are things in this movie. I haven't watched this movie in a while.
Yeah, it's been a minute.
It's probably been 7, 8, 9 years since I watched this movie.
I probably watched it when the Hemsworth version came out.
Maybe. I don't know.
Because I was like, that version sucked. Let's go watch the other one.
But there were things in this movie that I thought were a little bit head-scratching for me that I hadn't thought about in a long time. And they've always been there.
Talking to Goose.
Like, so like I always wonder how they got geared up so quickly, so fast. Especially when you realize that we're looking at like a 6 month stretch mm-hmm. here all of a sudden. So these guys literally go from, oh my God, what are we gonna do? Try it out, don't fucking cry, bro. You know, to they're running around with Uzis and rocket launchers and RPGs.
Well,
and all this other stuff. You know,
they ransacked that one Jeep they found.
It's just I feel like they got geared up too fast. It's like they got these, they found some magic loot boxes.
Well, no.
Speaking of the Jeep that they ransacked, mm-hmm. I just want to touch on those two soldiers that they kill.
Oh, yeah.
Those two guys taking pictures
of each other?
There are, is it three? I think it's three soldiers.
Three.
They're just like shooting the shit. They're reading the tourist sign. They're like, hey, take my picture.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, they're just soldiers doing their job. Mm-hmm. And then, oof.
Yeah, they're roosters, though.
That's rough.
Anyway.
But
no, to respond to that, my take on that scenario, because I understand what you're talking about. My take is that every ambush that they succeeded
they loot stuff.
They looted
those
convoys. This guy's got a rocket launcher. So now they have the rocket launcher. Now all we need is the ammo.
But that doesn't mean they know how to use that shit.
Well, I'll figure it out.
You know what I'm saying? These are high school
now
kids.
Now I've got a rocket
soldiers.
Launcher. Ho, ho, ho.
Right?
Yeah.
But and on top of the weapons, all of a sudden they start having camouflage gear and ghillie suits and oh my God, it snowed.
The ghillie.
So we got white snow gear.
That was one of the things that I questioned too. Like, there's no blood on them. Like, so you didn't take it off of a dead body.
You know, and no military training. And all of a sudden they have claymores lining the banks where they know their guys are going to go bang for cover. And
they had powers at this point.
I feel like they went from like level 4 characters to level 20 characters at the snap of a finger.
Not enough explanation for you.
This asshole over here has made me watch movies differently.
You know what I'm saying? You're so proud.
No, for real. And I didn't feel like, and maybe he probably agrees with me, I didn't get enough build up as further leveling up.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. And it just seemed like a weird transition from scared kids in the mountains to full on commandos that are taking out entire
convoys of trained soldiers.
You know, it was just,
I think that there was stuff that probably got cut out that set that stuff up. One of the interesting things about this movie though, is that, so it was shot in Las Vegas.
Oh, what?
Las Vegas.
Oh, you freaking guy.
Las Vegas, New Mexico.
Oh, yeah. Fuck off.
In Las Vegas, New Mexico, it got very cold in the winter. Mm-hmm. And so like they had to provide the actors with stuff that actually like kept them warm because it was like sub-zero temperatures out there. In fact, Patrick Swayze got frostbite during the making of this movie.
I've had frostbite before. It sucks.
Yeah. So I think a lot of that stuff with like the white suits and things like that were just practical to try to keep the actors from dying. There was like a montage in the middle of this movie where we see the Wolverines kind of come together and become like a fighting force that kind of skips over a lot of stuff that I feel like Vader picked up on, which is like my biggest problem with this movie is that it's more about the plot than it is about any of the characters. Mm-hmm. Like you don't get a lot of characterization. Like you realize like, okay, this one guy's the psycho. This one guy's got the PSD. This one guy's like the leader.
This guy's the traitor.
Yeah, exactly. So like,
see, and that was another thing we need to talk about, but go ahead.
Yeah. So there was a lot of stuff that was lacking in this movie, I felt, from like a, like getting connected to these characters. Cause like when a lot of these characters died, like I just didn't care. I didn't remember a lot of their names. And that's always been my problem with this movie, cause I've seen it multiple times. Mm-hmm. It is like, I'm so divorced from the characters themselves that like, I'm just watching stuff happen. And I'd say that's the biggest criticism of the movie.
Yeah.
But where things start to go wrong for the Wolverines is when they find out that one of their own turned on them and mm-hmm. set them up on an ambush. So did you want to talk about that?
There's a Daryl and a Danny, so, and I can't tell them apart. So,
shut the fuck up, Danny.
So I feel like they just missed telling us. They could have fixed this with probably like two additional footage.
Like 2 minutes worth of stuff.
Something to set something up.
Yeah.
Because all of a sudden we go to a scene where the Russians, where the bad guys are hunting our people through the forest, and they've got a tracker.
Yeah. Boop, boop. But who? He said he swallowed it or something.
But there was no setup.
Yeah.
To Daryl.
I think
going into town and visiting his dad and getting captured and tortured and made to swallow the tracking device.
Right.
And then making his way all the way back up into the mountains.
Right.
Okay. So there's just Daryl would have been missed.
Yeah.
Daryl would have been going, where the fuck is Daryl? Why is he not here? You know, because I'm sorry, but they're probably at least a good couple days walk.
You better come back with like a dead rabbit or something if you're gone that long.
The only time we ever see them go back into town is when they're going to plant bombs or like sabotage or something. Well, and then they always get the hell out of there
quick. It just seemed like that part of the movie seemed very contrived.
It's totally
to
fair.
Me.
Totally
and fair. It kind of took me out of it a little bit because it didn't make sense.
Well, also one of the narrative devices that Milius used in this movie is like all the stuff from the Wolverines is from kind of like Patrick Swayze's perspective.
Mm-hmm.
So like the story stays with the Patrick Swayze character, and the stuff that he doesn't witness himself, we don't see as an audience either. Mm-hmm. So it was kind of like a narrative thing, but like basically they find out that Daryl was captured. His dad turned him in. He was forced to swallow a tracking thing and then sent back to the Wolverine camp so that they could like ferret them out and take them out.
Yeah.
And they survived the ambush, luckily. And then they find out that Daryl betrayed them. And they're trying to debate whether or not to like kill him. And it turns out that C. Thomas Howell's character,
he's bloodthirsty.
Who's the psychopath. He just mm-hmm. up and like shoots Daryl like one of their friends after Patrick Swayze couldn't bring himself to do it.
Yeah.
It's like,
and that's kind of the beginning of the end for this group.
Yeah. I want to make a comment. One of our followers, Broba, is in the chat right now. And he made a point. I was going to make this just now anyway, but when Daryl, that happened to him, what they should have done, I guess it didn't really work with the way that he wanted to move the script, but it would have been a really cool twist if Daryl had come back and confessed and go, man, this happened to me.
They
know where we are. They're going to come after us. But they could have used him as like a really cool
decoy. Yeah.
To just mess him up, you know, put him on another ridge or something.
Daryl was the one that Patrick Swayze had the fist fight with at the beginning when he challenged him.
The class president.
Yeah.
I should be in charge of a survival group because I'm class president.
The class president versus the jock.
Oh, and then when the military guys are like, he's a leader, he's a troublemaker, and his dad's like, he's not like that.
He's a politician.
The Eagle Scouts? Yeah. No, that's not what it is.
Yeah, when they called the Eagle Scouts a paramilitary organization, I was like, Jesus Christ, all right. It was, I completely get what you're saying now. It's never really bothered me in the past. I've always just been like, oh, okay, so that happened off screen. Fine. I've always just kind of bought into it. But you do make a very valid point.
There's holes in this movie.
There should have been a scene of him getting captured and an explanation. And I don't remember if the newer version with Hemsworth addressed that or not.
I don't even know if I've seen that movie.
I've never seen the remake.
I've seen it.
I kind of want to watch it now.
It's North Korea. It's North Korea that attacks the U.S.
It's a lot sexier, too, I think. Aren't there like actual like relationships and hookup scenes and stuff.
The characters are a lot older, that's for sure.
Yeah, okay. I don't remember.
But we should point out this was Charlie Sheen's first feature film.
Really?
Yeah. Yep.
Huh.
Very young Charlie Sheen.
Yeah, this predates Ferris Bueller's Day Off and Platoon and Wall Street and all that stuff.
It's very strange. It's very strange watching this movie because it makes me feel kind of old. Because I look at guys like Patrick Swayze. He's gone.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's gone.
I mean, he died very young from cancer, but Well, he's gone, man.
Both him and Powers of Booth died from pancreatic cancer.
Yeah,
but originally, Emilio Estevez was cast in Patrick Swayze's role, and he had to drop out because of a scheduling conflict. Yeah, that
would have been crazy.
That wouldn't have worked. That wouldn't have worked.
Well, yeah.
Well, I wouldn't have bought Emilio Estevez.
Even though him and Charlie are real brothers. But.
Yeah.
Well, you also got to remember, like, Estevez at the time was, like, a big young star and mm-hmm. Young Guns.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, like I bought him as, like, the Billy the Kid.
You know, we've never watched an Emilio Estevez movie on this podcast.
Oh, can we do Mighty Ducks?
I want to do Free Jack.
No, I want to do Young Guns. Okay. I've been dying to do Young Guns.
Remember when we used to do three movies in one episode?
Free Jack, Young Guns, and Mighty Ducks.
There's August.
There's an Emilio Estevez month right there.
Emilio.
We got to do Minute Work, too.
Okay, whatever.
Whatever.
Oh, no, Repo Man.
Oh, there it is. Yeah.
Oh, that's the time travel one, right?
If you've never seen Repo Man.
I don't think I have.
You need to watch it.
I don't think I have. All right, let's polish up this discussion. I had a fantastic time watching this movie. I think it's a really, really good movie. You do point out some valid plot holes slash, you know, obvious edits that might have gotten missed or whatever. I totally get it. But as far as, like, a viewing experience, I bought everything that happened. Mm-hmm. I've never once was like, oh, this is not possible. No, I never did that. I was like, oh, this is freaking totally real. So I had a great time. I can't really think of, like, a favorite moment in this movie. I just really want to reiterate that I appreciated, like, the fact that they didn't go 100% hoorah. And they actually were like, hey, war is not good.
Yeah.
And people die that you love. And it sucks. Mm-hmm. I really am glad that they really hammered that home. That makes me appreciate this movie way more than the remake and most other, like, army hoorah movies that come out. Like, we're going to talk about Extraction later.
Yeah.
So fantastic movie.
Yeah.
But my God, is that hoorah war.
Yeah.
It's like, there's no downside. Everybody's cool. It's fine.
Everybody should war.
So I'm going to say this is a very, very solid 4. Very solid 4. This is a great movie.
That's stronger than I'm giving it.
And really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, go for it. What's yours?
Before I give my score, I just want to say my favorite scene in the show, and I don't really know why it's my favorite scene, but when they go into town, the first time they go back into town, and they find out where their dad is, right? There's a scene. It's
Jesus, yeah.
When they go and they meet their dad behind the chicken wire at the drive-in.
Like, don't you cry for me no more.
Their dad is cold as ice.
He's cold as ice. Don't you cry. Don't you ever fucking
cry
again.
Avenge me.
Avenge, yeah. Dude.
Because he knows he's about to die.
But the
just, I got chills. I got goosebumps.
I know, me too.
It gives me chills.
When they ask about their mother and he just gives them a look.
Don't worry about your mom. And just the way the music was playing, the music
score. You're
going to make
me cry.
Dude, that is...
that's a hard moment.
That's the most intense scene in the entire movie.
Completely agree.
And
completely
it gives me chills to this day every time I watch it. It was just so well done.
What a freaking...
It's just... That scene alone makes me want to go get my gun.
Yeah.
And go live in a cave out in the mountains to kill fucking commies. It really does. Those sons of bitches.
That's when the government won Vader over. They were like, yes.
And all my friends.
He wakes up the next morning. There's just like a box on his porch filled with ammo.
Yeah.
Some CIA guys on his porch going, I love it when a plan comes together.
Yeah. There's like a red bandana in the box. Yeah. He's like, yeah, fuck.
For sure. I just. But nowadays, I would be the old fuck in the internment camp. And that's what sucks.
He's lined up.
Yeah, kill those commie bastards for me, boy.
Yeah.
It's just, and then the way they killed his dad, you know, it was just straight out of a World War II Nazi movie.
Yeah.
They dug their own graves, dig that ditch. And that was hardcore. And that's where I'm thinking, you know, Matt was saying this is a PG-13 movie or whatever.
It should be R.
Yeah. That was some intense scenes.
That is.
And I'm like, I kind of had forgotten how intense this movie is in certain parts of it.
Oh, dude.
It's kind of a dark movie.
Yeah. When Swayze's girl dies at the end and he's just holding her and she's like,
everybody dies.
He sets her as a freaking booby trap.
Yeah. No, she set herself.
I thought he gave her the thing,
to kill her, and he said he couldn't. She said, "Give me your grenade."
Yeah.
Oh, I
missed
that. And
she says, "Pull the pin for me."
Oh.
And then she says, "Get out of here."
Okay.
And she sat there and she died. And then when the Russian guy came up and
she booby trapped herself. Yeah, God, that's dark too.
No.
Either way, it's dark.
Well, she knew she was dying.
Yeah.
But all that said, this movie has some issues. It does have some issues, and they're pacing issues, and there's just like, I found myself asking myself too many questions, more questions than I thought I was going to ask, and they were all questions that I thought should have been answered with viewing the movie. It's like, how did they get this stuff? Why are they trained up so well all of a sudden so quickly? How it is what it is. 20 years ago, I would have given this movie 4 stars. Today, I'm giving this movie 3 stars.
Okay.
But I love this movie. Don't get me wrong. I do it. This is it's one of those movies that if you watch at the right time of your life, it's going to shape the way you think about things. And it just that's where it hit me at when I was young. And me and all my friends, it really did. It had a profound effect on the way we viewed a lot of things in the Cold War era that we grew up. I'm pretty sure this movie was the reason every one of my friends except me went to the Marine Corps. Mm. You know, when we graduated from high school, I was going in the Navy. I've told you guys that I didn't want to be a Marine. I wanted to do something else, but I was still going in the service, but I got flat feet and they said, no, fuck you. So it's like, okay, fine. I guess I'll figure something else out. I'll go smoke a lot of weed, but it's okay.
Worked out okay.
Yeah, you hippie.
I know. But yeah, 3 stars, and I would any 3.5, but I'm gonna go 3 solid. Okay. 3 stars. So yeah,
fair,
good movie.
Jude, how about you?
I think I love 80s movies, and this is such a nostalgia trip for me. But having said that, I feel like this movie really holds up as far as like portraying growing up in a small town and having something terrible happen and you have to deal with it. Like, a lot of that stuff holds up today, like going out to the mountains, packing your survival gear, just the shit that you have in the house because there's no time to go to the store. So you pack up all the fucking Sprite cans and the Twinkies and you're just like, we'll figure it out. And the horror really still holds up. Like Vader said, like them digging their own graves and lining them up firing squad. And like the horror of war, I felt like was really well done and still really holds up. I give this 3.5 Don't You Ever Cries. Had I been able to hear the other side, I probably would have given it 4 stars. But I'm mad. Why'd you set your movie up like that?
That's Amazon Prime's problem. I don't think that's a movie problem. I think that's Amazon screwing up their subtitles thing.
Well, you can go to Amazon Prime for your other 1/2 star if you want to argue about it.
Fair enough. Kadesh, how about you, buddy?
So there are 2 scenes in this movie that kind of like stick out to me. The first is where Powers Booth is basically giving them the rundown of like how the war was fought. And the thing that kind of I thought was interesting is that in this alternate universe where World War III happens, the Russians nuked the Chinese, killed like 400 million of them.
Yep.
And so the Chinese are now like on our side. And this was back in the time when Reagan was kind of like reaching out to China and the tensions between those two countries were cooling. So I just find it interesting, like looking at it from today's perspective. It's those Chinese, they're okay.
No.
even back then, because the Chinese were communists back then, the Russians, I don't think would really do that. But it was just kind of interesting to see like the scenario that was played out, like what cities survived, what were invaded, like what territory is being held, what people are doing. And that leads us kind of like towards the end of the movie, where basically after Swayze and Sheen kind of like do their little assault on the town, we get a epilogue where Leah Thomas's character, who escaped with David?
Danny.
Okay, yeah, Danny. So her and Danny escape at the end, and basically Patrick Swayze and Charlie Sheen create a distraction by attacking the town, giving them time to kind of like escape out of enemy territory. And when they get rescued, Leah Thomas has this kind of like, has this voiceover talking about like, you know, the people who were sacrificed and how America won World War III and all this other stuff. And that was actually something that was added by the studio after the movie was finished shooting, because they felt like they needed a more optimistic ending. because originally John Milius, he calls himself a Zen anarchist, being the Zen anarchist that he is, he had a very strong, like nobody wins in war type message, like everything's shitty, like, you know, it's all very depressing. And he left it ambiguous as to like what happens after, you know, Patrick Swayze and Charlie Sheen die. And so like the studio basically came in and was like, you know, you need to shoot a happier ending for this thing. And so like that's what he came up with. But it was also kind of interesting to see, like, before they go on like their attack, Patrick Swayze on that monument rock where they wrote down the names of all the people that they lost, he writes down his name and Charlie Sheen's name before he goes.
Well, so, they knew they were going into a suicide mission.
Yeah. And John Milius, when he shot like the alternate ending to this movie, thought that it was kind of appropriate that, you know, like all the heroic acts that these kids did is just kind of like siphoned down to like their names on a fucking rock.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, I like the futility of that image.
God damn, man. Yeah,
that's good. I like it.
Yeah, he's not wrong.
No.
He's not wrong at all.
Yeah, so, but I've never actually liked this movie. Like, if you look at it from the perspective of like when it came out in the 80s, it's a very powerful film. Like, it had a lot of impact on people and at the time. It doesn't hold up, in my opinion, on like later viewings. It's not one of those like all-time classics where like you can just watch it over and over again and enjoy it as much as you did the first time you saw it, in my opinion. Okay,
let him have his opinion.
That is 100% your opinion.
well, to me, like,
Alex is squinty eyeing the fuck out of himself
now. I've been waiting for this because I already know his score because I looked it up on
Letterboxd.
Oh, Jesus. You're a little cheat.
Cyberstalking. So like with this movie, my biggest problem has always been like you never get attached to the characters. It's always about the events that are happening. And yeah, there are emotional moments in the movie, but they're emotional because like you relate to them as like a human being within the context of like the horrors of war, as opposed to like, oh, like I really like this character. I'm sorry to see him like suffer like this and stuff like that. The other scene that I thought was memorable was when C. Thomas Howell kills Daryl.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And basically he crosses that line where, you know, like he was a psychopath, but he was our psychopath. And now he's just like a straight up psychopath. And then when he dies, he goes out like a boss, shooting a rocket launcher at a helicopter, and then shouting Wolverines as he as the only thing that can kill him is like a freaking like Apache helicopter like shooting down on him. So like, but that moment where he kills his friend and like everyone's just like, you know, shocked about it and stuff like that, and he's just like, what, you know, like I did what I had to do.
He's a traitor.
Yeah. That I think is the most poignant moment in this movie for me. And it also marks the beginning of the end for that group, which I thought was kind of like poetic.
They could have just tied that guy to a tree and left.
No.
Something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But at the very least, like I do have appreciation for this movie because I've studied John Milius. I never thought he was a very good director, but I think he's a very good writer. And so I got to give this movie 2 Wolverines out of 5.
Really?
Yeah.
I'm surprised.
I want to just really quick.
Yeah.
I want to give a shout out to Basil Bolt. How do you say it? The music guy.
The
guy who made the score is the same one that made the score for Conan.
Oh, okay.
And I just thought that the music in this thing, it's worth noting that it's
perfect.
Really, it really is perfect. And just like in the Conan movies.
That opening credit scene where they're like flying over.
The musical scores in movies are important to me because they help you touch that emotional feels that you need for each scene. And I just thought that for this movie, the theme of song of this movie is on point.
A couple of years ago,
before
we started this podcast, would you have ever given a rating to a musical score in a movie?
Wow. Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah, 100%.
Oh, okay.
I've always been into... I've bought just as many musical soundtracks as I have actual records.
But, right on. Cool.
So, yeah.
All right, guys, that's it for our review of the 1984 Red Dawn. Everybody here is correct except for Kadesh.
He's allowed. I get it. I totally get his rating.
It's fine. Whatever.
I was like, I lowered mine because this movie just.
Oh, I'd bump mine up.
Yeah, just something. I think it just hasn't aged as bad.
You're becoming a snob.
No, I'm not. I, it's just There's just a few things that I've noticed about this film that should have been better.
Okay.
That's all.
Okay. Fair enough. All right, everybody. Thank you guys so much for watching this review. If you would like more of our glorious content, go to saltynerdclub.com and join up for the Patreon content. That is only $5 a month, and you guys get a massive library of content to play around with. We have reviews of classic sci-fi TV shows like the original series of Star Trek, also Buck Rogers in the 25th Century. We also have movie commentaries where we sit down as a group, watch a movie, and you guys get to watch along with us. We did a movie commentary with Len Kabaczynski recently for a Christopher Lambert movie called The Hunted. We had a great time. So I highly suggest it. It's well worth the $5 a month, and it goes a long way to help us over here at the podcast. So join the community. Go to saltynerdclub.com. Sign up. On that note, we're going to finish this up. Thank you guys so much for watching the video. Stay tuned for more amazing, amazing movie reviews from the Salty Nerd podcast. I'm so freaking drunk right now. Stay salty,
You're
folks.
You're holding it together.
See you next week. Hey guys, if you like this podcast, don't forget to like and subscribe to the channel and comment below on your favorite video as well. That goes a long way with helping us boost our channel and get out there in front of more people. And it lets YouTube know that we're doing something right. And if you want to catch us live, we go live 2 times a week, once on Saturdays at 10 a.m. Pacific time and on Tuesdays at 1:30 p.m. Pacific time. So join us there in the chat. We will see you on the live stream. Stay salty.